19. Fragments. Ice forms on high parapets. Verglas sheens roadways. Blood freezes in potholes. Thunder snow unfurls across the eastern limits of the sanctum. The air stains yellow. Lightning, electric red, forks from the churning ice clouds and demolishes spires. It strikes the Widdershins Tower, removing an upper section in a spray of stones and tiles. Those who bear witness are reminded of the 33rd card of the Tarot Arcana, which symbolizes the overturn of fortune, or achievement obtained through sacrifice, or world-changing inspiration. Or perhaps just a tower brought to ruin by fire. Derry Cassier, junior loader, hauls his munition cart to old Lord Rogel. Cassier is 17 years old. Old Lord Rogel is a heavy artillery piece, one of 60 earthshakers ranged in a battery along Predicant Rise near the Primus Gate. After 9 hours of near-continuous firing, the elevated barrels of the 60 guns are glowing like coals. Many pieces have stopped working due to overheat deformation, breech jam, or block shear. Cassier's eyes are crimson with burst vessels, and the bandages around his ears are soaked in blood, despite his rubberized defenders. This will be old Lord Rogel's final shot. It will be the battery's final shot. The 40-kilo Tethel Intermix high-explosive shell on Cassier's cart was the last one in the supply dump. Cassier takes out a piece of chalk to write his name on the shell as a last goodbye, but his fingers are too numb to write anything. Flamers roar and purge atomized human meat out of vanquished bunkers. The last waves of loyal stormbirds and hawkwings lift from the Brahmaputra fields in a final effort to run interference on the files of the traitor legions flowing in rivers greater than the Ganges or the Karnali into the heart of empire. None will return. Those that make it through the torrential frenzy of the anti-air batteries will be broken by the air itself. Cyclonic fury will fold their wings, dash them from the sky, scatter them like petals, or cast them away like dead autumn leaves. Rogue firestorms, uncontained and uncontrollable, consume entire zones, as though some deranged burn therapy or desperate moxibustion is being applied to the terminal world. Corporal Nahina Prafet comes to, blind, in a crater 90 metres wide. Her entire brigade, the 467th Tanzier Exertus, has been caught in a rolling barrage as it advanced on Koenig Bar. She calls out for a medic. She gropes around for help. She takes someone's hand. But it's just a hand. There's no one else alive. There's no one else intact. Alfarius leans back and offers John his hand. John sighs, takes it, and allows himself to be hoisted over the steep lip of the incline. The cavern he's been brought to is large. It was larger once, but like everything in the depths, it's been compressed, the ceiling crushed low by centuries of weight above. It was something once. John can't tell what. Part of a manufactory, perhaps, or a transit station. Sections of the old walls are tiled or panelled with rusted metal plates. There's litter on the floor, the broken and commonplace debris of an everyday life that ended, perhaps suddenly, thousands of years before. A tin badge, a paper drinking cup, an infant's plastic pacifier, the stub of a ticket, miraculously preserved, recording a fare and a one-way trip between two places that John's sure don't exist anymore. A one-way trip. "What are we doing here?" he asks Alfarius. The warrior gestures. What John first took to be a shelving part of the chamber's wall is actually a row of large objects, massive things stored under drab weather sheets beneath the lee of the ceiling. Alpharius crosses to one and drags the cover off. It falls aside, heavy, in a puff of gathered dust, revealing the dirty bulk of an Aurox transporter. The Aurox bears the colours and insignia of the 7th Legion Astartes. "The hell?" says John. Alpharius moves down the line, lifting the shrouds from others. Two more Aurox, one 7th Legion, the other Hort Palatine. The Hort machines clearly rusted beyond repair. A militia Gorgon, two mastodons in old 100 paint. One of the Mechanicus's Triaros conveyors, an Exertus Dracosan, a White Scars Rhino, a Coronus Grav Carrier, burnished in the brassy gold of the Legio Custodes. "Help me check them," says Alpharius. "What is this?" "A way station, a depot cache. Our advance procured these vehicles years ago, and secured them here."
"Procured?"
"Use whatever word you like, John. We've come a long way, but there's still a long way to go. We need transport, or the humans will never make it." John tries not to mark the way Alpharius says humans, as though John's not one of them.
"So you stole this stuff and stowed it away down here, just in case?"
"Yes," says Alpharius.
"Warriors too?"
"Yes."
"In case of whatever we were required to do.
Please help me check, John. It'll be quicker. These machines have been left untended and unserviced. It's possible none of them will run anymore. Check for power reserves, secondary or primary. See if we can cold start any of them. If we can't, I'll have to warm up a generator, hook it up, and try a boosted ignition. That'll just take time." John crosses to the mastodon, leans his rifle against the treads, and clambers up the cold hull. He starts working to unclamp the hatch.
"So," says John, "can we talk now? Are we out of mineshot?"
Alpharius has disappeared for a moment. John hears the hatch on a nearby machine being unfastened. He gets into the mastodon, hauls himself up into the driving position in the dark, and fumbles for the voltaics panel. He throws the master switches, 1, 2, 3. Nothing even flickers. He climbs back out.
"This one's dead," he calls out.
Alpharius reappears. He's retrieved something from one of the other vehicles. It's Alpha Legion Tech, a metal pod the size of a field stove. He sets it down beside the mastodon, twists the top, presses, and the side panels unfurl like petals. A soft blue light starts to glow inside the casing. A side damper. John can feel the deadening throb of it at the back of his skull.
"I want your help," Alpharius says, standing beside the damper and looking up at John. "I want your trust," John replies. "Maybe we can trade."
Alpharius nods. John sits on the edge of the cold hull, feet swinging, and stares down at him. "At the start of the Heresy War," Alpharius says, "my legion made preparations, contingencies. We placed troop reserves under the palace in stasis. We secured depots of procured machines. This is one of them. We mapped routes, in and out."
"In and out?"
"Like this one, John. Even as Dawn was fortifying the palace above our heads, we were tracing the cracks."
"Dawn missed this?"
Alpharius shakes his head. "Not at all. He knows about it. As far as our operatives can tell, Dawn left 6 hidden routes open. Well, hidden, of course, even from Perturabo's painstaking surveys. Dawn's a clever man. This is the only one we found."
"He left 6 routes open into the palace?" John asks. "What kind of siege craft is that?"
"Not in, John. Out." John thinks about that for a moment.
"Gods," he says. "To get out?"
"To get him out, John."
"Dorne expected to lose?"
"He decided to win,
says Alpharius. But he is meticulous. He prepared for every eventuality. We, in turn, secured it for use. What use? Well, there's the thing. For whatever was needed, John. Once the Cabal's plan was ditched, we prepared for every eventuality. Move in support of the throne. Attack in support of Lupercal. Whichever turned out to be the smartest tactic. Let me get this straight. You waited to see who would win before deciding which side you were on? A crude summary, John. We waited to see how it would play out, so we could intervene to our own maximum advantage.
And this is you doing that? Asks John. You helping us? That's the side you've come down on?
Not at all. Alpharius is silent for a moment, as if deciding whether to say more. It's clear Horus has to be stopped. Whatever he is. John, this isn't a civil war anymore. It's not a war master turning on his king. It's not politics. It's not even a material war at this point. All the rules have changed. This is about preventing the full and final extinction of human culture.
So we're on the same page, says John.
John, I was sent here to begin a rapid response activation of the buried sleeper forces. Awaken them from Sasan so they could begin combat operations.
Against Horus?
Covertly. We don't have the numbers. But, as you may remember, we can be surgically effective. The thing is, John, the Astartes we buried here have no idea what they're waking up to. They went into stasis without knowing which side they'd be on when they came round. To ensure chain of command and doctrine imperative, they were all preconditioned to respond to code words. We had a list. One word, John, auto-hypnotically implanted at the moment of revival, and the warrior would instantly understand his parameters and instantly obey them.
One word?
Yes. Each one is a plan condition. Sagittary triggered loyalty to Horus. Xenophon triggered loyalty to the Emperor. Paramus triggered a directive of mutual annihilation to bring down both if it was deemed necessary.
Good God.
Thisbe triggered evacuation and withdrawal. Orpheus triggered a policy to ignore both sides and focus on chaos itself, to fight it or seize the means to control it, and so on and so on. There were many. Every contingency, every possible option, hypno-coded. I was sent to initiate Condition Xenophon.
Loyalty to the Emperor.
Correct.
All right, says John.
He shrugs.
That's a start. Why does telling me this buy my trust?
Because I had only just started when she arrived and found me.
You mean Acte?
Alpharius nods.
And?
You can see her power, John, Alpharius says. I'm not doing this voluntarily. Quite the opposite. She has me entirely in her control. Everything I'm doing against my will, and I can't resist. John points at the side damper.
Well, you can now. That shut her out.
It's merely muted her, John. Very briefly.
Whatever. She can't keep up that kind of mental control forever.
She doesn't have to, Alpharius replies. When she found me, she read my mind and triggered one of the code words in me. I am aware of it, but I can do very little about it. I am operating on a plan condition, and that, he gestures to the damper, is allowing me, briefly, enough free will to beg you to trust me and assist me.
What, for old time's sake?
Yes, let's say that. John nods. Raises his eyebrows.
So who are you?
old friend.
I'm pretty certain you know already, John.
You have been carefully monitoring my voice patterns.
Ingo Pesch.
Correct. The Alpha Legionnaire unclamps his helm and takes it off. The face looking up at John is familiar, but then they all are. They all look so alike. If he'd seen the face from the start, it would have taken John a good while to decide which Alpha Legion warrior it was, and even then he wouldn't have been sure. But he is now, as certain as he can be. The face, the voice, the little micro-expressions of effect only a logokine can discern.
What was it? John asks.
What was what?
What was the code word, Pesch?
Orpheus, says Pesch.
Shit, says John. Fight chaos directly, or seize control of it.
Pesch nods.
Why?
Because that's what she wants, says Pesch. She wants this war stopped, yes, this form of the war. She says Horus is a puppet, a ragdoll so steeped in the warp he is utterly enslaved by it. But he's strong. You know how strong Horus Lupercal is, John. The witch believes he can be turned.
From chaos? You mean saved?
Pesch shakes his head. Towards chaos, John. She thinks he can be turned to face it. She believes he's strong enough to take hold of the shackles it has placed upon him, shrug off its control, and use those same shackles to enslave it.
Chaos?
Yes, John.
Enslave chaos?
Yes, John.
Well, then she's a colossal freaking idiot, he says.
Pesch laughs, but there's no real joy in it. The enslavement of chaos has been a dream of many for a long time, he says. Everyone thinks they can do it. Lupercal, the Phoenician, Lorgar Aurelian, the Pale King, even that twisted little bastard Erebus, the so-called Hand of Destiny. They all thought they could do it, and they've all ended up slaves to darkness. That's the way it works. No one can do it. Some think they have enslaved the warp, but that's just the warp telling them what they want to hear, while it merrily pulls their strings.
The Emperor, says John.
Perhaps, if anyone could. Once, not now. This wouldn't be happening if he had succeeded in doing it where everyone else has failed.
But the witch thinks she can?
She considers herself a hand of destiny too, John, a better one. She thinks she can steer Horus, correct his course, adjust his approach, even this late in the game. She believes she can use him as an instrument, and because he is so very strong, master chaos.
I refer you to my previous statement, says John.
And I refer you to mine, says Pesch. I am helping her to do it. I am committed to that course of action. That's what Orpheus means. I'm fighting it, but it won't work. I can't break triggered plan conditioning. All I can do is see what I'm doing, as if I'm some detached observer out of my own body and mind. And I can tell you this. You have no idea of the effort this requires, even with that thing switched on. I can tell you this, and beg you to act.
Stop her.
Yes, stop her. And I'm sorry to say, probably me too. Because the conditioning will continue even if she's dead.
Shit sakes, Pesch. Well, how do I stop her? Oh, you! I think you're wildly overestimating my abilities.
You were always resourceful, John. John jumps down from the hull.
I can't do it alone, he says. I'll need to bring the others in. All, Leetu.
Pesch nods.
And not yet either.
Why not? Asks Pesch.
Because, you moron, on the off chance that by some freaking miracle we can take you and the witch out, we'd be lost down here. We've got a mission of our own to complete, and we've come a long bloody way to do it. Get us into the palace. Once we're there, maybe we can try something.
Pesh nods again.
Yes, that's wise, he says.
Shut that damper down and stow it somewhere, John says, thinking hard. I may need it. Hell, I will need it. And weapons. Something heavy.
There are weapon caches aboard each of these machines.
All right, says John. Let's find out if any of them actually operate.
Agreed, says Pesh.
He suddenly places a huge hand on John's shoulder and looks down into his eyes. John flinches.
Thank you, John, says Pesh.
I need to say that now because I probably won't be able to later.
Old time's sake, eh, Ingo?
Pesh turns and reaches for the damper.
Wait, says John. Wait, Ingo. Why is she helping us?
What?
If I accept all of this, Pesh, if I accept it the way you've laid it out, it doesn't explain why she's helping us. Why she came to find us in Hatay Antakya. Why she pulled our asses out of the fire. Why go to all that trouble?
Oh, John, says Pesh,
I thought you joined all the dots. You're part of her plan. She needs you. That stuff she said about you all being archetypes drawn together, that might be true. That might have some ritual significance. But she definitely needs Alanius. Alanius and that knife of his. She needs you to help her contain Horus Lupercal so she can turn him. That little stone knife in the hands of a perpetual like Alanius is about the only thing that could possibly, and I mean possibly, have a hope of hurting him.
Yeah, says John quietly. I had a horrible feeling that was why.